Thanks, John. I wanted to come back to this discussion about the interpretation of compliance, and then I'll get to the tools and that you talked about, John, in your last question. So within the BWC, compliance judgments really lie, the responsibility for a compliance judgment really falls very squarely to states. Now, just as an aside, very interestingly, when the BWC was first negotiated, it was initially conceived that the final arbiter of compliance judgments would be the UN Secretary General. But when the treaty was finally agreed, that responsibility had moved to the Security Council. But that's really an aside. The main responsibility for compliance judgments within the BWC lies not with anybody other than states. Up until now, each state party has sort of relied upon its own resources to assess states' parties' compliance. A step forward would certainly be if, a collective determination of compliance, some sort of collective judgment on compliance could be put in place, if that was ever to become politically acceptable. But consultations are therefore really important, right? Consultations between states. There are other mechanisms, too, that are important in compliance judgments, et cetera, but I think consultations are really important. And I already told you a little bit about the one historic example we have from the formal consultation process in the BWC. But we also have historic examples of more informal, more ad hoc examples of informal consultations. And one of these is the trilateral process between the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia at the beginning of the 1990s. And that trilateral process really resulted in a number of significant achievements, one of which was the collection of evidence to show that there had been a massive biological weapons program in the Soviet Union, so provided evidence of non-compliance, which was then explicitly acknowledged in the confidence-building measures submitted by Russia by that point in 92. The trilateral process also led to the decision to drop this, what was then the Soviet reservation to the 1925 Geneva Protocol, which had reserved Soviet and then Russian rights to retaliate in kind if they were attacked by a biological weapon. And so, again, that was another sort of significant achievement. And it also that the trilateral process where you had visits from, the Russians to the United Kingdom and the Russians to the Americans and the Americans to Russia and the Brits to Russia, that sort of these various visits, I think there were three rounds of these visits in all, provided insights for future biological verification initiatives that were then under discussion or were starting to become under discussion as part of the protocol negotiations. And so I think these ad hoc arrangements, like you're talking about, John, can be very useful, and we do have historical examples of them. Now, it's very difficult to put an accurate sort of figure on the number of these informal consultations that we go on, because generally they're invisible, right? We don't know how often states consult one another, really. Certainly, consultations on significant compliance concerns are likely to be rare. What I think we still need as a tool here when we're talking about consultations is to further evolve this idea about how do we consult one another, and really to lower the bar for what we require of consultations. It should be something, the bar should be set very low in order to encourage dialogue, communication, engagement. And I think to get that kind of sustained dialogue going between states. So I think that is one of the key things that I would take away of how we need to further evolve something like that has developed in, from an ad hoc mechanism.